All right, we got another episode for you guys featuring Dan Skinner and Demir Simonich again. On this episode, we go over maximum recoverable volume and what that means for training and how we kind of approach that in our offices for our patients that tend to come in that might be doing just a little bit too much. You might find this one pretty interesting if you like to live in the world of high training volume or if you feel like you're not even doing enough. Again, Demir and Dan, super good friends of mine, love having conversations with them. We kind of go off the walls a little bit in regards to some other topics that we kind of throw in there. But yeah, without further ado, let's get it with these two.
You know what I'm talking about.
Effective dosage.
Yeah, basically, like, so for instance, you know those people who you see and you're just like, they come in and they're like, oh, my SI joint or my shoulder hurts or whatever it is. And like, I'm like, oh, well, what do you do? Well, it kind of hurt after I did CrossFit. And then I woke up and I went whitewater rafting. And then afterwards I was like, I'm going to go for a 10K run. And you just, you almost have to look at it as like these people have exceeded the maximum recoverable volume that their body is capable of dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
MRV. So maximum recoverable volume, minimum effective dose. It's like they're almost like two sides of the equation, where it's like if you're getting a person to do any kind of training, whether it's like enough to make their cardiovascular system handle a flight of stairs or it's to prepare them for like the CrossFit Games or something like that, the minimum effective dose is the amount of input, so the amount of stimulus, the amount of weight, the amount of reps or whatever, that's going to yield an adaptation. So like if I do nothing but sit around and just like the only thing I'm curling is like this 12-ounce beer, I might not get any adaptation. But if I'm doing a bunch of curls with like a 75-pound weight, which is what I do every morning for hundreds of reps, then I might get a slightly bigger bicep because my bicep is already huge.
Perfect. You get it? So I think it's a good point because like, you know, what's his name's James Fitzgerald's thing just came out on Netflix. You guys watch that yet?
No, is it good?
It's great. Yeah, the 50-50-50. So basically, this guy, he's an Ironman athlete. And what he had done was he did 30 triathlons in a year. And that was like, Ironman in a year. And that was in different countries that he pulled that off. And then he decided, well, that's not fucking hard enough. So he's going to do 50 Ironmen in 50 different states in 50 days.
See, what I think is stupid about, like, we should understand that there's some people that are just stupid. Okay, I understand that maybe like back in the day, some 10th grader took your lunch money and pantsed you in front of a cute girl or something like that, but you don't need to get back at the world by doing a massive amount of endurance. Like that, okay, we get it. Like, cool, you've gone for a long period of time. That's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but dude, it's pretty awesome to watch. I think it's an amazing human feat. The guy's a freaking animal. And he did it. And he did it all while traveling with his family.
Oh, my God.
And he had a team.
That's insane.
How neglected is that guy's family?
I know. I love it.
Where's daddy?
Yeah. Why is daddy gone for 19 hours of the day?
But Jess and I had the opportunity to sit down and watch him speak when we were in Sacramento at Uriah Faber's gym. And so it was pretty compelling to listen to his story, you know, as like the reason why he did it was to raise money for a foundation.
And so that's different. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So he there was a big purpose behind it other than, hey, look at me, I can do this thing. And the interesting thing about him is no one really knows that this guy did that until now. And this happened, but 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, crazy. That's right? Because no one cares about triathlon.
That's part of it. That's kind of part
of
it.
Just kidding.
Just think about the amount of training that guy had to go through. And like, but they, if you watch a documentary, basically they were trying to utilize, they're utilizing the days that he's training, like starting the competition of like against himself. they use the first 10 days as the marker as to whether or not he's going to be able to complete it. They said if he can get to 10 days, he's going to complete this. They thought that was possible. Granted, there were some other things that he had to do, you know, like some IVs here and there so he wouldn't actually die. And they ran into some issues with like weather, but they were prepared for that kind of, and they dealt with it. But he still finished Ironman distance in that 50-day period, which is just like, that's unbelievable. I really don't think that there's going to be other humans that are capable of doing such a thing. And there's people that have tried. So what I found most interesting and compelling about him is when he talked about that, and there was a CrossFitter named I believe her name's Jennifer Horner. And she was talking about how, oh, I can fucking do that. I'm fit as shit. I've been to regionals a couple times. And she got into like running and things like that. And she announced that she was going to do the 50-50-50. And when she reached out to him, or he reached out to her and said, hey, if you need any tips, we've been through this. I could tell you about my team, how long it took for me to train, which was 2.5 years. And all like the metrics that he has, like what they were looking for, his heart rate, everything. There was a guy in New York that was like spying on everything he was doing to keep him safe so he wouldn't die. And all she asked for were his times so that she could beat them.
Hilarious.
She went on ESPN. She got interviewed by Huffington Post. She was telling everybody. And guess who ended up in the hospital after day 3?
She did.
Yeah, she sure did. She didn't respect.
That's the funny thing is 3 days.
Yeah,
like that, and you know what? That's exactly what I would expect for any person.
I would. Yeah. And it's like, you know, the fact that she did 2 days in a row is incredible, but at the same time, it's like, man, I don't think people understand like what that training volume looks like.
Right.
Oh, dude, it's crazy, and like. And it's not just the training volume, but it's the quality of that. Like, it's what that volume is doing to your body. Like, take Terry Fox, one of the most famous Canadians. You guys probably know all about him.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Guy, you know, if you're running a marathon every single day, that is so different than riding your bike for 200K every day. Like, the ground and pound on your joints, like, literally the inflammation you're creating just by, like, making your way through that marathon would be enough to like shut down your kidneys. Like you could get rhabdo out of something like that just from that, like the amount of like muscle breakdown that you're getting. Like it's crazy. And getting back to that, have you guys ever had an IV?
No, I haven't.
Remember had like a post exercise IV before? Oh my god.
No.
Had one in my life and it was the most amazing experience. It feels like literally you just had a full night's sleep. And you woke up and you had like the best coffee you've ever had in your life.
Wow. After.
Oh, it's amazing. And I went from the situation that I got mine in, I hadn't ridden my bike in 6 months. My friends were putting together this massive ride. I, like an idiot, decided I'll just go out for the first half of it, right? And I ended up riding with them for like almost 175K, like completely die on the way home. Hobble back to my house, and then one of my friends at the time was a nurse and she had an IV bag that she hooked me up with, so I got I think it was like 500 cc's or like 500 milliliters, and I could feel the cold temperature going into my veins, like the drip wasn't warm or anything, so I could feel the cold. And probably about 5 minutes after I had it, it was like a light switch got turned and all of a sudden I was like, I felt better than I've ever felt.
Power on, baby.
It was like, on. It was like, you know, when you reach over for that light switch.
Yeah, but that's insane.
I think some people, you know, Cameron Haynes like runs like a marathon a day.
Who's Cameron Haynes?
He's like a.
I'm just kidding.
Like a hunter.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan talks about him a lot.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
it's inspiring stuff to see that someone can do that, but like the world is filled with outliers, and there's also glorification. Like people glorify the fact that like, oh well, this guy's out, he's running a marathon every day. It's like, that's amazing. He's like a unique individual, but that doesn't mean that you.
He's also been running for 20 years.
No one asks about that stuff. It's like not you, like mother of 3 kids who also has to pack 5 lunches a day, and then also, you know, you probably shouldn't be running a marathon a day.
Yeah, and that's, I think the same thing about David Goggins. I think that he's super motivational, super inspirational, but at the same time, he's a fucking psychopath. And it's like, you know, people will read his book and they get so inspired, but they don't listen to the very end of it, where he talks about how broken down he is physically. He is not very capable of many things other than just, I would say, running. But he has this weird mental capacity that he can push himself through that discomfort. And it's just like, that's not the point. It's like pushing through that part of pain that you feel when you're exercising, you know, like where it's like, oh, this is so hard, I can't take one more step, versus the, man, my low back is destroyed and I have this zinging discomfort, but you know what, I'm mentally tough and I'm gonna push through it.
Yeah, it's that no pain, no gain kind of. Well, it's also the discomfort versus pain. Like, I think that exercising it is inherently uncomfortable. If you're doing it right, if you're trying to get that adaptation, it's going to be uncomfortable because you're pushing your body into a new direction. But I think that also needs to draw a clear distinction between pain. Sharp stabbing pain in your foot is very different than the pain of the burn of the effort in your legs or in your shoulders or whatever. So
yeah, it all depends on like priorities. People prioritize the need to get the workout in, or get a sweat in, versus like what they're doing to their body long term. You know, like what's the quality of that run if it just means like you can't walk for 3 days? Like, was that worth it?
But yeah, and that comes down to the recoverable volume, right? Like, if you like any workout that you're doing where you're destroyed and in a puddle and you can't lift your arm the next day, is not necessarily meeting that. Like, you're not keeping underneath that maximum recoverable volume. And it's okay to go push past that. Like, there should be workouts probably like at least once a week where you exceed that maximum recoverable volume, but then you take the next day off, or you go and do a light day. Yeah. But you don't smash like consecutive, like that. I mean, one of the biggest problems I think that people have with some people who are programming CrossFit is that they program every single workout to just be a ass kicker. So you're going from one day to the next where you're just beating yourself into a deeper hole.
Yeah. What do you think, Demir? That's a dog. That's not Demir.
No, I agree. And this is what I try to tell. You know, I've been treating a lot more jiu-jitsu athletes, and I'm noticing they're taking that, what you're talking about, this maximum recoverable volume, to even a worse degree, because now you're including more punishment on the body as opposed to, you know, as much physical exertion, right? It's not like most people don't join Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in order to lose weight and get strong, right? Like, you might lose weight and those are benefits, but you're getting into it for, like, you want to learn it, you know, maybe self-defense or whatever.
I thought that it's so that they would have something to tell their friends.
Yeah, exactly. it's like CrossFit. And so, you know, I have these patients who do jiu-jitsu, and that's all they have time for. And so then they try to extract so much out of jiu-jitsu. You know, they're trying to, like, lose weight. They're trying to, you know, get in shape. They're trying to get good at jiu-jitsu. They're trying to get strong. It's like, this is all a terrible recipe for you to get hurt, because all you're going to do is go hard every time you go, and you're not trained to go hard at this thing. And you're not giving yourself adequate time in between sessions. Like, what are your goals and what are your priorities? If you're trying to do jiu-jitsu for the sake of getting good at jiu-jitsu, then you need like a cardiovascular base, so then you need to take care of that kind of training separately, probably. And then it should probably be intelligent, so you should probably not have something that, you know, breaks the body down, so you shouldn't run a marathon a day. Maybe go swimming or cycling or whatever, you know, do some high intensity stuff, do some kettlebell stuff.
So where do you take a person who, like, let's say a person's come in and you can clearly see they're doing too much, and they're basically, they're operating like outside of their pay grade. Do you go back and say fundamentals is the most important thing? Do you tell them to back off the jiu-jitsu? Do you tell them to appreciate it for what it is? Like,
yeah, I tell them I'm interested. We kind of like go and define what their original goals were for getting into it, and whether, you know, jiu-jitsu is a part of that. And a lot of these guys, like, they also want to get in shape and get, you know, strong and fit on top of getting really good at moving around, so you get good at jiu-jitsu, which is like mobility kind of work, which is what most of those kind of guys need, especially at middle age. And so we usually develop a plan to, you know, have some sort of, depending on if they have a gym membership or what, we do some low grade, low impact, you know, cardio work, just so they could get their wind, so that they're not, you know, getting that kind of training purely from when they go and train jiu-jitsu. And then they have to have like a daily mobility thing, because you can't just be stiff and then strain your body by wrestling and then go back to work the next day. Like, you just keep going the wrong way down the like the spectrum. So you have to undo your day, and then you have to get ready for the training. And then they start realizing, like, I have one, this is like one of my coolest examples. This one guy, he started jiu-jitsu like a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And he was this guy, he came into my kin stretch class, and he's like 48, I think, or 49 years old. And he was, you know, not overweight, but a little bit bigger. And he did jiu-jitsu maybe 4 or 5 times. And he came into my kin stretch class, and he stayed afterwards asking questions. He couldn't believe how sore he would get after class. He couldn't believe how sore his neck would get after jiu-jitsu, all this kind of stuff. He didn't think he could train jiu-jitsu long-term. He felt like at 49, you know, years old, his body was already so old and broken that this was just going to break him fully. And I was like, yeah, man, you got to, you know, undo all that tightness and then, you know, prepare yourself for all of this kind of stuff. And so now fast forward a year and a half later, he comes to my kin stretch class pretty regularly. You know, he's doing things like intermittent fasting. He's working out regularly. The guy's like lost weight. He's doing kin stretch stuff at home, but he brings his wife to kin stretch. So he's completely changed his lifestyle purely based on because he wanted to get into jiu-jitsu. But he realized that there was no way just doing jiu-jitsu was going to get him there, right? And so, like, he had to combine and define what his goals were. I don't know. Shut up, Luke. Define his goals, and then, you know, he needed a kind of like a guide to help him get him there.
I think, yeah, also, on it's just like kind of on the flip side of that example, what I see is people that run themselves down with exercise. And I think that's part of the thing that Dan's alluding to is when I tell a lot of people they need to do less versus like implementing more exercises to help them get back to those fundamentals. I just say, no, you're clearly doing just too much. You know, a lot of people around here are training 7 days a week. There's zero rest. And
hey, dude, even God took a rest day.
That's right. Yeah. Sundays, baby. And so
she sure did.
And so it's like, you know, I want people to have fun. I want them to do what they love, which is exercise. But when they're just like pressing down on the gas pedal and they're running on fumes, the first thing they need to do is do less. And then realize, like, okay, maybe it was they have some poor movement. And so I want to address that. But the first step is getting them to just say, yes, I am doing too much. And maybe even 6 days a week is too much for some people. It's just, they're just hammering themselves, and I want them to take that step back and then slowly work on the fundamentals.
Of course 6 days a week is too much for most people. Not maybe.
Yeah.
I would argue nobody should be training hard 6 days a week.
Yeah. It's,
dude, it's funny,
and like, you know, especially like the CrossFit kind of crazy model of let's have a strength in the beginning and now let's do a WOD. That's crazy.
Yeah, there's certain places it works. You know, like I'll use it, like here's the good side of it, right? Like back in Rockland, our gym was notorious for being one of the stronger gyms in Sacramento. You know, a barbell cycling gym. It's like, what's the first thing you're going to do when you walk into that gym? You're going to cycle out a barbell. You're going to be doing some heavy loads. You're going to be working at a pretty high percentage. And then the WODs were really aggressive. Obviously, a lot of people scaled it and scaled the weights. But the people that didn't, that liked to compete, when they would compete, a lot of times, Rockland CrossFit's going to end up on the podium, top three. And so it's like, what's their goal? Yeah. Like, obviously, what's their goal? Their goal is to podium at these local CrossFit comps in hopes to, like, you know, when there was regionals, to create a team to go to regionals and potentially go to the games, like what they used to. And so they were notorious for it. And, you know, it got me, like, I feel like my fitness level was incredibly high when I was training there. But I also respected the volume. Like, you know, I wasn't training there 6-7 days a week. But I also did a lot of accessory stuff just to keep myself healthy and stretching a whole lot because I am a stiff man. And, you know, eventually I got hurt a couple times, but that's kind of part of it. I understood that. But at the same time, my capacity was, I feel like, really, really high.
See, my gym's nowhere near, like, Rockland. You know, we're just like a regular folk.
But that's what people go there for, right? Versus like CrossFit Lumen, like you know what you're gonna walk into. So it's like if you have these right. goals,
yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, my opinion would be different if I was located in Rockland, right?
Yeah, or if you were like, you know what, I'm gonna take this CrossFit stuff pretty seriously. Throw me into the fire, but right. at the same time, it's like not every single body is ready for that. I didn't start off at 5 days a week. I was in there 2 or 3. If I was there 5 days a week, most of the time it's just to stretch because I had time and get to know.
And I'd like to say too, there's nothing wrong with training 5, 6 days, even 7 days a week, but not sustainably. Like if you want to put it into your program, like if you're doing something like, you know, this person who is doing those Ironmans, there's no way that this guy is like, okay, well, I should probably train 3 days a week and then take lots of rest. It's like, no, his training is going to reflect the craziness of his event that he's going after. And so CrossFit is pretty crazy. There's lots of stuff in there that you've got uncertainty, you've got high volume, you've got strength and everything. So you kind of have to train for that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you're a smart coach and you're a smart athlete, you're going to realize like maybe 2 to 3 weeks of that intense training is what I need, and then I need to step it back. Yeah. Maybe go down to 2 days a week even. Maybe take a rest week off where I'm just doing mobility and stretching. But it's like periodization, that idea of maximum recoverable volume is not just limited to one session. Maximum recoverable volume is something that you can look at on the same kind of like micro and macro cycles that you do for any kind of strength and conditioning program. So you might say, you know, for this week, we're actually going to do, and like I said, that style of CrossFit workout where you are doing something like a really intense strength lift at the beginning and then a Metcon at the end, it's not to say that that doesn't have its place in your program, but I just don't think it's every day.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think
for most people.
Yeah. For most people. And then again, you have to realize like, who are these people that are seeking CrossFit gyms? What I actually would love to see, I think the problem is that in different like avenues of fitness, everybody feels like they have the answer. Like every CrossFit coach or every CrossFit owner sees a person come in. Well, in my opinion anyway, I haven't seen a single person really get turned away from a CrossFit gym. There it's always like, oh, you're trying to lose weight? CrossFit's perfect for that. You're trying to gain muscle? CrossFit's perfect for that. It's like there's certain things that we know that different parts of fitness are great for. It would almost be cool to just see people say, hey, you know what? Maybe this isn't like a weight loss gym. Maybe we're going to actually, you know, refer you over to a weight loss gym that's down the street. And then they're going to send all of their clients who've lost a little bit of weight and now want to get competitive. Maybe they're going to find their way over to our gym. And the cool thing about that is it's kind of like being selective about your clients that you see in practice. It's like, I don't want to see everybody under the sun. I want to see people who are, you know, feel like they want to take charge of their health and they want some accountability. I don't want to just see just anybody.
That's a really good point. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, I know, I agree with that. And to your point, yeah, no, I do agree with that. I think I agree. Yeah.
Wise words from Demir.
Wise words. How's Lev doing?
Good, he finally left me alone. I was laying down.
You should see Gordy, he's laying on the couch being a little butthead.
Yeah.
Melvin's at home.
Weren't you going to get into triathlons, Joe?
I was, and I started training for it. And then my wonderful little compartment syndrome decided to make a nice comeback in my life. So it got worse and worse and worse as I trained. And then I backed off and was like, okay, maybe I'll do some laser therapy on my legs, see if that helps a little bit. It's like, no, it just turns out I've got really shitty blood flow in my lower legs. And so, yeah, pretty much ever since I started that training, whenever I run more than a mile, it kicks in.
They say that skinny calf syndrome affects 1 in 3 men.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I've been trying to grow those things for about 31 years now.
Well, hold on. Both Joe and I have it. I don't understand.
I mean,
2 out of 3.
We're beating 3 out of 3.
Beating the statistics.
Dude, like I said, it helps concentrate the power.
Yeah.
The smaller they are.
It's less wind resistance. You just...
I can fit my legs in really small crevices. Yeah. That's funny. But yeah, no, I wish I could have made it through it, because I feel like I definitely had the conditioning. It's just once I had to get into the running issue, and you know, it started happening to me when I started taking on a little more miles, but it wasn't a whole, like, what I would perceive for myself, a whole lot. I started off with just a mile run, then I went to 1.5, and then I started doing this, like, I'm gonna do some interval running while I'm doing my mile, and then I would rest. It was, so this was me putting on about, no joke, 5 miles a week, and then I decided to go for a 3 mile, and that's where it settled in, and I was like, that's weird, haven't felt that in a long time, and I walked it out, goes away. And then I just go into a light jog, and I do just fine. But you know, when I started doing the bicycle stuff a lot more, when I go from the bicycle and then go outside and run, it was fast. Like, it would show up before the mile. Oh, so I was like, oh yeah, this congestion is not good. So yeah, I just stopped and I said, screw it, just not gonna do a triathlon. Don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Not worth it.
No big deal.
Dude, it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
As much as you want to squeeze into a singlet, it's just not worth it.
Well, shoot, that's why I signed up for Olympic weightlifting now, so I can squeeze into that darn singlet.
What other sport can I use this singlet for?
Exactly.
You know, I've noticed that this is such a, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems like there's the CrossFit athlete who do CrossFit for a while, maybe they'll get injured a couple of times, and then they'll be on and off maybe, and then they'll transition to something like powerlifting, where they realize, like, all right, this is less work, less movement around, I just have to focus on these three things, and then they're like injured again specifically because they're only doing three things.
You know what's funny, just,
yeah, like, go ahead.
With that transition, like, focusing more on Olympic weightlifting, I feel like my volume and the style of lifting that I'm doing now was really, really intense. Like, really intense. There's days that I'm a little concerned with, like, man, am I even going to come up out of the hole from this squat? Like, this is pretty hard for me. And it makes me look at, like, when I did CrossFit workouts as, like, CrossFit was a lot easier than this.
Crazy.
So I don't know, it's depending on what you're doing with your program, right? And so for me, my programming is
powerlifting, not Olympic lifting.
Yeah, well, I mean, but respectively, yeah. You know, like, even with powerlifting, you kind of have to go to that, you have to flirt with the sun, you have to push the volume on the higher end of numbers, you know, so like working at 80-90% on a consistent basis is wicked hard.
And all of the numbers are based on your one rep max versus like some arbitrary number that
exactly right. Up. That's what I love. Actually,
it's not just like 95-pound thrusters and whatever
for everyone.
Well, it's so funny. How many times have you done a workout where you're like, 95-pound thruster for buddy over here is going to put him into an early grave, and then same thing for this chick next to me. She's gonna like have no problem with that whatsoever. And
the firefighter next to me does 185-pound thrusters.
Yeah,
I think he's fine with 95 pounds.
Yeah, but like, but it, they call that being they call that humbling experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I mean, it's just interesting. I don't know. It's like, if do you take it seriously? Do you not? I think that in general population, people should stop looking at fitness as this like glorified thing that if you make a couple posts on Instagram, you're going to get some sponsors and people are going to like you. It's really, social media has really taken fitness to a whole different level, to a point that people are just becoming, they're getting into it for all the wrong reasons.
What kind of reasons?
I see it as people that want to make this transition into trying to be healthy, but yet they need to let everybody else know what they're doing. And I see that as a, I see it as a problem. I don't think that general population people shouldn't, they, like, I really don't care a whole lot of like, I want people to be healthy. I want them to make that leap into exercising. But when I see someone that's brand new to the gym and they have a videographer with them and they're trying to do bicep curls in the mirror while with like four benches around them and making sure they hit the right angle, like, you're missing the point. You're missing the point of being healthy. You're doing this for an ego issue and you want people to like you. It's like, that's a whole different conversation when it comes to psychological issues. But like, it bothers me because I see it a lot.
And that's why it's so difficult to find a bench.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, with social media, you'll get to that kind of stuff. I think there's a bigger prevalence of, because it's something that, it's something similar to nutrition. When it comes to fitness and nutrition, most people think they know what to do.
Yep.
Period.
You think so?
And, yeah.
Most and, people? I feel like most people are the reason why the whole industry exists.
No, I don't think they're specific about what they need to do, but I think they're like, no, I need to do like yoga because yoga's good for me.
Oh yeah,
yoga is great. Yoga's probably, the best.
It's probably because like, they searched it and they, right. And they say, oh, what do you do if you're stiff?
Exactly. Look, gosh, if everybody did yoga, actually, this would be a much better place. But like, you know, okay, what's the most popular thing now? CrossFit. Okay, I need to do CrossFit. It's like, do you though? Like,
I think the problem is the stuff that really helps people long term, keeps them safe, and teaches them good habits is the most boring stuff. It's like that typical strength and conditioning, like good diet, focus on sleep, a little bit.
Okay, so if everybody did, you know, if everybody was mobile enough to get through a Turkish get up. And if people just did 5 Turkish get-ups per side, 100 swings, with 50 on each hand every day, most people would be pretty fit. But it's the most boring workout to do every single day for the rest of your life.
I've actually been calling them Bosnian get-ups lately.
And yeah. What
they do is they just complain the entire time while they're doing, why do I have to be doing this?
I did a 40 kilo get-up the other day just to make sure I could do it.
There are certain things that it's like, you know, I think people like to be, I mean, and this is totally understandable. People like to be entertained while they're working towards fitness goals. Like, I think there's also something, there's some people that are almost like, you know, they like this idea that like the harder it is, the better it must be for the outcome. So let me just like get it out and over with. The same way that a lot of people, like when you're doing manual therapy on them, if you're like doing a little bit of muscle work on them and it hurts a little bit, they're like, oh yeah, like deeper must be better. It's not always the case. That's like the idea that like, you know, better isn't, more isn't better. Better is always better. And I think each person is unique in their experience and what they've done before. And it's, it, the problem is, like, it actually lends itself to people wanting to do things that are entertaining and, like, enjoyable, right, and watch other people do things and try the exercises they see on Instagram and
right, stuff like that. Exactly. And I think, you know, most people should just,
but always taking it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like embracing it a little bit more. Like, I was kind of with you, Joe, at first, where I was kind of like, oh man, this is turning into like kind of like an annoyance for me. But I almost try and look at it as like, okay, what are the positives out of this? If a person's like so excited about throwing up a video of them doing like bicep curls or whatever it is, whatever exercise they want to do, and even if that brings a little bit of like health awareness to another person, maybe that's like a good thing. But
exactly. Yeah, I agree with that big time.
What I think the real problem that I have with that is when the message gets a little distorted and then it comes across as like, hey, I'm doing this, you should be doing this. It's like, in all honesty, there's a good chance that you probably shouldn't be doing it and this person probably shouldn't be doing it. But because you're showing a video of you doing it, they're like, I want to try that too.
And so, that, I think that right there, the way that you say it so eloquently, that's what I'm trying to say. Not like trying to be a complete asshole.
No, I get it. That's kind of why I said it.
Yeah, thank you.
I think I know you, Joe. I don't think it was like, I think it all comes down to the interpretation and like the purpose of all that stuff. So
yeah, I agree with you.
And people have like, you can put whatever you want up on social media, and it's up to other people to look at it if they want to, and if not, you just next. But it's clearly not going away. I think the big thing is there's so many people that are throwing their two cents out there that it becomes a very diluted market. So you get these super smart guys that are like guys like Eric Cressy, Mike Reinhold, Demir Siminak. They're all putting out this content. It's all super high quality. But the thing is, it gets mixed up with like Vinny Rehab and all these other dipshits that are doing things where you're just like, why do you have a band around that person's neck? Are you choking them? What the fuck is going on?
Put it in their mouth.
Yes. Exactly. All that stuff gets mismatched, and now all of a sudden you think that there's a certain amount of accountability, or because one person has more followers that their information is more correct, when really it's probably actually the opposite. There's probably a number cruncher could go in there and do a
statistics. I've had two patients in the last month asking me what my thoughts are on the movie you put up.
Mm. I get that
question. What are your thoughts on that program?
I mean, I don't know much about it. You know, I don't follow them on Instagram anymore because it was annoying. But if you do see their post and it does change the way that you press or squat and it does improve, great. But if you have shoulder pain and you're looking at their previous shoulder posts in order to fix your current shoulder pain, you're not going to get anywhere. And I think there's a difference. And so most people don't know that difference.
Yeah.
They're putting out content in order to just inform people. And that's amazing. Like, everybody should do that. And so people, you should go on their page and take a look at what way you can improve your form when you're squatting, what way you can improve your form when you're stretching, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't mean that your specific pain can be cured by their previous Instagram post.
Correct. And don't think for a second that it's not like they're not doing everything out of the goodness of their heart and it just so happens that they make money doing it. It's like, it's a business like anything else.
Exactly. No, but, yeah.
So they're putting out content and they're selling basically a generic
right,
a mobility.
I say is it's a generic, probably a program, you know, like anything else. I say, you know, I would rather do something specific based on what I have going on. If I have something going on with my shoulder, I'd rather do specific exercises that were given to me by somebody after an assessment, as opposed to randomly searching around online and doing random stuff that I see for shoulders, where now all of a sudden you are in the driver's seat as a patient. You're putting yourself in the driver's seat of as a doctor, as the provider, as the person in charge of the case.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and you shouldn't be doing that. Right? You should go out and you should outsource the problem. If you have a problem, a long-term problem, go see somebody, get it assessed, and get a specific plan for it, as opposed to taking control of it yourself and then thinking that, you know, and that's what I mean by, like, most people think they know what they're doing with like fitness and that kind of stuff. Is
so
they think they know what to do for their shoulder.
So
they're
like
just gonna grab some bands.
Yeah, and just kind of wiggle them around. So, you know, I had a little bit of experience with some patients that had actually gone through the MoveU program for 6 months, and the three that decided, they all went to the same gym. This is back in California. The three that decided to do this weren't willing to do the work that I wanted them to do. So when they said, should I do this program? I said, yes. If it's going to get you to exercise and do these stability things, I'm pretty sure that's what it's going to be. Then yeah, hell yeah, get after it. All three of them came back and finally decided that they were going to listen and that they were going to do what I told them, because they invested and they had zero changes. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that all three of them had pretty unique issues going on, all different.
Did they do the program, or did they do the full thing?
Yeah, they did the full program. They did a 6 month. Okay. They did a 6 month program, and
it's a long time to invest. But it's also,
and they put the work in. You know, they actually did it. They were like, yeah, how come my, look, this is the glaring question. How come my QL is always so tight? Or why do I still feel that pinching discomfort in the top of my shoulder? And crazy, I'm still getting headaches. I don't know why this program didn't work. It's like, well, maybe it's because the things that you're dealing with are not just simply helped out by stretching and just doing some blanket exercises that every single person that's going through their program has to do. It's a little more specific to your needs. And so once we dialed it in, you know, we got some success, and they just followed the rules.
There is kind of one thing that, I mean, I think that people who are well-educated, who can put together like a generic program, like I give them kudos, because it's got to be a really tough thing to do. And it's got to be, you know, it's got to be tough to send something like that out into the world and then have it like up for criticism and everything like that. And from what I've heard, like some of the exercises in it are actually quite good, and it looks like, you know, I don't even know what people pay for that, something like that, but it could be a good investment for some people. The thing that I'm not a huge fan of is people that then blanket statement things like, what you need is this program and nothing else.
Yep.
When really, often it's like, well, there's I've never come across anything that rivals a good thorough examination to find out exactly what's going on. So you can actually be like more specific with all that. Even if you are still doing those exercises, it at least gives you more insight. And then the fact that, like, I still think there's a huge, huge necessity for manual therapy for people who are already dealing with like an acute injury or a chronic injury. So it's like, you don't want, like, you can't out-exercise a movement or an injury, or like a movement problem or an injury. Something like, you can't just add more exercises to something that needs less exercises and manual therapy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I'm gonna dog on him a little bit, the dude from MoveU. And I think his biggest issue, or at least my biggest issue with him, is that he kind of downplays professions as, you don't need a massage therapist, just get a friend. You don't need a physical therapist, just watch these videos. You don't need a chiropractor, let me show you how to pop your SI joint. It's like, you know, from a, a practitioner perspective, I look at that as, this guy clearly has zero skills when it comes to doing manual therapy and helping people, which is why he has now made that shift to selling programs, because that's what they got better results with. That's fine. That's cool. Do your thing. But at the same time, don't just be like, oh, this is bullshit, you don't need that. This is bullshit, you don't need that. I know plenty of massage therapists that have phenomenal hands and they know how to help people, make them feel better. I know plenty of physical therapists that do a great job with exercise and manual therapy. I know a million chiropractors that can manipulate and make people feel better in a matter of seconds, and then consistently help them out.
Other chiropractors at the end.
Yeah, millions. Yeah, no. And by millions, I mean,
I've met some shitty chiropractors.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, and by millions, I just mean four.
But you know what? That's like, I get what you're saying. It's like, there is a big downplaying on the manual side of things, and I always take this side when people talk about, you know, research that says, you know, manipulation this or dry needling that or whatever. It just comes down to the fact that as much as we like to think that everybody can ultimately do the same service, I'm not in the same class as Usain Bolt. That guy will run way faster than I ever will. And no matter how much I train, no matter how much I try, I just, and I'm not saying that, like, I'm not trying to make this about like, oh, I think I'm such a good practitioner, but I do think that there is a certain level that you can train up to and you can put in a lot of work. But then some people just naturally have talent, right? Like, I think people who identify as having talent can then hone their craft a little bit better and then become even better practitioners. But there's also some people who you kind of know who they are, right? You've met a massage therapist or like even like people in our program, you kind of like, how is this person ever going to make it putting their hands on people? There are artists that are draw sunsets that are so beautiful. If you ask me to draw a sunset, it's going to look like someone sneezed in a napkin while they're eating eggs. It's going to be a bad, bad picture.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it comes down to skills. And not, yeah, like we talked about that before, that not all hands are created equally and everything. But yeah, it pisses me off when I see that. And he's like, yeah, just lay on your side and throw your leg over your body. And he's like, and that's how you do this. It's like, man, no wonder why he failed as a manual therapist.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
It is not. You cannot.
Same thing with like self-myofascial release or foam rolling versus coming to see me and getting like treatment done, manual therapy done. It's not the same thing. The outcomes are not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because like what did you do when you got injured, Demir? Did you just stay at home and foam roll, or did you like you went and got you got?
Well, first, I checked Instagram. I checked hashtags. I went well, back pain.
Attica.
I did sciatica.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, and I see it everywhere where it's, oh, I've got these inversion things and we got to do the, and granted, I just did some inversion today, so I'm going to dog on myself. But like, not everybody is.
Just because you do something doesn't mean you have to dog on. Like, it's okay to
I traded a buddy an inversion. He gave me his inversion table for an adjustment.
Dude, that guy got.
He was moving to me, yeah. And he was like, "Dude, I kind of got to get rid of this thing. What do you think?" I was like, "I'll take it off your hands." He's like, "Can I get an adjustment?" I was like, "Yeah, come on."
Yeah, good trade.
Best four yeah. minutes ever spent.
Not even.
Oh man. That's well, let's get back on track. That's too fucking funny. I'm dying.
Oh man, I love it.
But Danny,
it's not the same.
It's yeah, well, it's definitely not the same. But so tell me, like, when you're Daniel, when you're dealing with people in your office, back to the maximum recoverable volume, how do you address that? Like, let's say because you work with a pretty active community. Let's say it's one of your competitive cycling people. Like, how do you address that with someone who's like, they're a paid athlete and they're looking to continue?
I usually have pretty much the same conversation I have with a person who's like a stay-at-home mom. It's always like, I emphasize the fact that like your body, I usually draw it out actually. I'll draw it like a little graph, and on one axis is going to be stress and the other side is going to be time. And then I basically show them that like your body has a tolerance for stress, and that combines from everything from the stuff that you're doing throughout the day. So whether that's like, you know, driving through traffic or whether that's getting a bad night's sleep or whatever, and then whatever stress that you're adding in for training. And so each person is so unique in their injuries that usually you kind of have to break it down into that part. So if they're dealing with like knee pain or something like that, then we could say, well, a lot of this is going to be coming from the training volume that you're doing. But then it also might be coming from things like maybe you're actually walking the majority of the day, or maybe you work a part-time job and you're also standing. And maybe that's kind of reaching the capacity for the knee joint. So when people look at it as capacity, and I think this is a big thing I take from the FRC school of thought, is this idea that injury occurs when capacity is exceeded. And so what I try and do is I look to see where can I create more capacity for that person while dealing with that injury. And that could be through, you know, particular exercises and movements, or sometimes it can be from taking away the stress that's kind of leading to that capacity being surpassed. So most people tend to understand that, but the problem is a lot of people feel like what they need to do is more they're like, okay, I'm hurt, my knee hurts. What more can I do to prevent that from hurting? It's like often, it's actually a really easy answer. It's like, good news. Like, you actually don't have to do more. You just have to do a little bit less. And you have to do less in a very specific way, because we can't take your total training stimulus away, because then you're gonna be, you know, underprepared. But we have to look at this as like, what's the most important thing here? If your bread and butter is to be getting a contract and you've got a renewal coming up next year, we might have to kind of think of it as like damage control for a little bit. Maybe I'll see them a little bit more frequently for treatment, and that manual therapy is what's going to help to lower that stress and build that capacity.
Nice.
Yeah, and I agree with you. When I was doing my heart rate training, you know, I was going down the rabbit hole of that heart rate.
Heart rate variability?
Yeah, and especially with that MyZone challenge back in April. And, you know, and this is something that I talk about with my patients as well, is, you know, stress is cumulative, right? The physical stress, like, throughout your day, you know, emotional, all that psychological stress, and then you're coming in and you're doing hard workouts, whether they're, you know, cycling or whether they're CrossFit. You know, you got to have a way to be balance all this kind of stuff out, and you got to have ways to kind of track all of it, and just kind of stay on top of it, whether you're tracking it, you know, with metrics, or just kind of staying in tune with how you're feeling, and not just kind of revving the engine all the time just because you feel like you need to do more and more. Because I meet those patients too who are constantly like, what more can I do? What more can I do? I'm like, not much more, actually.
Do less. Stop it. Yeah. No, now you're just staying still.
Yeah.
You got to do something, Peter.
It's also a good conversation to have people with people where you just say, okay, you want to do more? Okay, you need to really focus on your recovery, because it's not about how much you push a spring down. It's how much that spring can bounce back. So, like, why don't we, instead of looking at all these extra exercises you can do, why don't we say, like, hey, get an extra hour of sleep. Spend that time that you would have been doing your extra weight training session or your extra WOD or whatever, and go and have a nap. Like, some of the best, like, there's a CrossFit competitor in Victoria, and he owns a gym now, and he's like a specimen. The guy is like, he's an outlier, because he can handle so much stress, and his body has taken like such a beating from the training. But one thing that I appreciate so much about this guy is that when he trains and he's done his workout, he can sit by the side of the gym, and within 10 seconds, he's asleep. He is so good at napping, and like, when he's not working out, just lazing about, which is such a great recovery.
That's a good tool. Skill to have.
Yeah, like, I wish, it takes me like 45 minutes to have a 10-minute nap. I'm just lying there like, oh, come on. But
yeah. Being able to like wind yourself down is a skill.
Yeah, exactly. Like that.
You wind yourself up.
Totally, very much.
Yeah. We did those like ice baths, although we did really small little tubs. But being able to like breathe through that thing, that's a skill set, you know, being able to calm yourself down. So totally. I gotta run.
Okay.
I gotta go. Let's
We can put a cap on it. Hey, Demir, but before you head out, because it's late over there in Chicago, why don't you give people some information on how they can find you? And speaking of mobility programs, pretty sure you're just about to drop one.
Yeah, dude, I'm writing, I finished an ebook. It's coming out next month. It's a full body mobility program that's better than the Moody program.
It's very
you know, I think it's more geared for beginners. You know, if you're already an athlete or practitioner, you might find it interesting, but it's mainly geared for beginners and people that really don't have a kind of basic routine for their full body. And so we take them through a 12-week-long program of 4 days a week. So 48 days worth of, you know, sessions and programs. Each has like a video instructional. Everything's, you know, on YouTube. Everything's Mike Grill talking you through it. You can do any of the movements that you want on any of the days. You're not bound by anything besides having a good time.
So how do people find you?
What's that?
So how do people find you so they can check you out?
Yeah, so it'll be up on my website, activehealthchicago.com. But it's part of my new company, Active Health Fit. So activehealthfit.com.
dropping a new company on us.
Yeah.
That's news well, to me.
That's even news for us.
Yeah.
Us
yeah. Oh my God.
I'm looking forward to checking it out, man. I might even try and do the whole thing and give you some feedback.
Yeah. Chris yeah, McBroom so, you know, has a baby and Demir talking about earlier
about, you know, putting yourself out there for the world and then being open to critique. You know, I was talking to Martine about it today and I was like, fuck, I'm nervous. She's like, why? I was like, are you kidding me? People gonna shit on this.
Because you have a bunch of haters like me and Joe, and yeah. just carry up, just dropping yeah, exactly. into the piranha
People
tank.
That know more than me are gonna shit on it.
Yeah,
but that's okay. I feel like it's not for them. It's not for them. I remind myself it's not for them. It's for beginners.
I mean, it's for us to hate on, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I bet you it's going to be good. I'm actually excited to check it out. And I also think getting back to that idea of like people, there's going to always be people that are smarter that listen and hear and see what you say. But I definitely think that like even a person who, you know, you can be reminded of something you haven't heard in a while and that can be just as insightful as learning something for the first time.
Yep.
So it's always good to like good reminders of like basics and fundamentals. It's never a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
So what's your Instagram so they can hate on your page?
Yeah, Active Health Chicago.
Perfect.
It's funny because I've just secured a Active Health Fit Instagram handle. So,
oh, you fucker! No,
you're gonna need.
Yeah,
we'll talk payment.
I'm sure somebody's got it already.
Yeah. And what about for you, Dan?
Yeah. I am recoup_official. That is my Instagram, and then I've got a Facebook for my Recoup as well, which is just look up Recoup Victoria on Facebook, and it should be there.
Right on.
Not Recoup Fitness. I keep getting ads for Recoup Fitness, and that's not you, Dan.
No, it's not. I think Recoup Fitness does – it's a different company. They do like mobility products and stuff, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. They have those like cryo balls or whatever for like cold mobility.
Maybe I'll reach out and try and collaborate with them sometime soon. But
yeah,
no, it's
hashtag collab.
And if you guys want, you can check out our merch. We got these amazing Recoup sleeveless shirts. We also have Recoup oven mitts available for purchase.
Excellent. Recoup long underwear coming this winter.
I love it.
Coming to Chicago, people only.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, pleasure, guys. Always. Thanks for taking the time.
Good chat with you guys.
All right.
Yeah, talk to you next week.
All right, peace.